Do you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do? All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The health and wellness podcast dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Welcome to the GSMC Health and Wellness Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey, and I may or may not have mentioned I am originally from California, currently live in California. I have lived out of California a couple of times, but not too long to the point that I feel it really changed me in any way. So I obviously view things from like a California norm. And I'll go even further and say from like a Northern California norm, because I'm sure there's a whole separate thing going on in Southern Cal where they like look at things we see as norm or vice versa and just be like, what? Why? I don't get it. But so one of the things that is totally normal for me, and I think this actually exists in most, if not all states, but came in at different times, was certain like you absolutely must safety laws. So, for example, like the seatbelt law, which I'm kind of just shocked even had to come into effect as a law. And I think it actually did in my lifetime, or I just remember it from childhood, even if it maybe existed before I was born. But it's just like, why wasn't this just automatically the thing when cars got seatbelts? Wouldn't you automatically want to wear the thing that could possibly save your life? Why was this ever like optional? I don't quite get that. I'm just like, but that seems so basic. And it's like absolutely, completely second nature for me to get in a car and immediately put on my seatbelt. Like, it would be so weird not to do that. Like, even if I got in a car and I didn't have seatbelts, I'd be like, wait, what? This is a car? I don't know that we can move anywhere until I have a seatbelt on. My body does not quite know how to handle this. But one that I do remember, and again, I think it was passed in my lifetime, and if not, it just came into play when I actually got into middle school and started riding a bike to school, and so therefore it was like much more important to me at that time, was the helmet law. This, again, I want to say passed around the time I went into middle school, where it was required if you were wearing a bike that you had to wear a helmet. Helmet laws can be somewhat controversial. I haven't heard too much controversy on seatbelt laws, but again, that feels like such a natural thing to me, and those have clearly proven, you know, to save lives if for nothing else than keeping you from like flying through the windshield if you come to a sudden stop, that I'm like, would there really be controversy on that? But helmet laws are interesting because scientific research has shown that having required helmet laws can sort of act inversely of what you're trying to do, because people view people with helmets as safer. And so therefore, whether you're the person wearing the helmet or like the driver driving along the road with the person who's biking along the road, you kind of act more recklessly. It's like, oh, I've got my helmet, so I'm protected, so I don't have to be as careful as if I didn't have my helmet. And that's come up, I think, a couple of times in psychology. It was like, oh, yes, this thing that was supposed to be, you know, make us safe, in the same way people in like, you know, bigger cars, as opposed to like those really, my mother will say that she just cannot imagine like going on the freeway in like a smart car, those little small little things that almost look like they don't have a back seat. It was just like, you want to go like 60 something miles on the freeway? And nope, absolutely not with all the big cars on the, nope. But in the same way, people who are in, you know, bigger cars or sportier cars are like, hey, I'm in this thing. And so I'm in this, you know, metal box that will protect me. I can go a little faster. And it's like, but no, that's not, you know, car crashes are still terrible at whatever speed you're going, irregardless of the car you're in. You just, you know, have slightly more protection, but don't let that go to your head, literally. Same thing with helmets. It's like, just because you have a helmet on does not mean, you know, you can dart out into traffic or like weave between cars, or even just biking on the road makes me nervous. And I've seen it, you know, like San Francisco, I lived in for a while, and they have, you know, several designated bike lanes that are painted green. And I'm just like, I will see people like zip through that like it's nothing, but you're still biking alongside a car. That makes me nervous. But it has now come out, and this actually came out a few months ago, but I'm not sure why I didn't hear about it at the time. But there was a research study that has come out showing that bike helmets, even if you wear one, may not actually protect you as adequately as you might think. So Virginia Tech and the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety have done a study using the latest techniques for simulating head injuries, and they found significant variations in how bike helmets protect against concussions. And this is another thing that threw me off when I was looking into this and reading more, is my first thought was always sort of helmet against concussion more so than anything else. And that might just be because helmets and concussions have been in the news so much in the past decade or so. But helmets, it seems, if not originally, primarily focused on like keeping your skull from cracking if you hit it on the ground. And I'm like, I'm so used to helmets that they obviously do that, that I'm like, isn't that like a duh first step? Okay, now let's protect me from concussion. Oh, what, we're still focused just on skull fractures? Wow. So depending on what type of helmet you have, you may or may not have adequate protection in case of an emergency, which obviously the whole point of a helmet is in case of emergency, it doesn't, like, if you happen to have a 100% safe bike record, that helmet's not actually do anything except for that in case of emergency situation. So urban style helmets, and I didn't quite get what this meant at first because you don't helmet in a city. What do you mean? Urban style helmets or helmets with nearly solid covers with few vents, and those that haven't adopted the latest anti-concussion technology were more than twice as likely in this study to result in injuries. And it's amazing because the current standards for bike helmets were set by the US government in 1999. I don't know if that's the year when the helmet law came into play in California, but it's a bit strange that I am quite certain helmets have changed, or at least the technology, you know, to protect your head has changed quite a bit since 1999. It's like, really? I don't know how often you do check standards of like safety things, but that one hasn't come up for, you know, review in nearly 20. Okay, wow. Anyways, so the current standards do a good job of testing whether a helmet will, like I said, prevent skull fractures or death if you happen to have a direct impact, but they aren't actually a good reflection of most real-world bike accidents, because most bike accidents probably don't actually involve like direct impact to your head. Like, my thought was always, you know, if I happen to like get nudged by a car and then like sort of wobble and fall over, but going at a really high speed and hit my head on the ground, somehow that's my idea of what a bike accident looks like. I don't kind of want to go any, you know, worse situation than that to imagine. I do remember there was a time when I was in middle school, my sister and I were biking, and she was on the street and I was on the curb, and she tried to hop onto the curb in front of me. I don't know why, but she messed up and actually ended up falling and skidded. And then I ended up like sort of, you know, kind of running over her, but I also fell too. It was not a fun situation. But she didn't have a helmet on at the time, and so she sort of scratched up the side of her face along the sidewalk, and she had that scar for a number of years. And I'm very thankful that that was the worst it was, because, you know, that your head going to the ground is not anything you really want to emphasize. But so anyways, the current standards don't assess the strength of the helmet rim covering of the side and forehead areas, and they aren't very good at determining if someone will get lesser but serious head injuries like concussions, which considering, again, I've heard so much about concussions, I'm just like, those are lesser. I mean, I guess than a skull fracture, but unless the skull fracture is like caving in, if it's just like crack, is that really lesser than a concussion? Because concussions just sound terrifying and like long-term problems, and yet that's not what the current standards really look at. Huh, that's a little unnerving. But thankfully, the study did find some things you can look at for helmets to best improve your chances, which we will talk about after this short break, so stay tuned.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Health and Wellness Podcast. Today we are talking about helmets and other safety equipment, but mostly helmets. So in this Virginia Tech Insurance Institute for Highway Safety study, it found that this relatively new technology called Multi-Direction Impact Protection System, or MIPS, can lessen the risk of a concussion. And MIPS is this thing, I can sort of visualize it, but it's hard to explain. So the way they explained it was it has an inner layer that allows the head to slide and twist slightly in an impact, because the problem with the original standards is it's like, oh, that's great in a head on. But most, you know, bike accidents that, thank goodness for your helmet, don't really come head on. They come sort of slide, or they're coming and you're going at a weird angle, and then your head goes one way and your body kind of goes the other, and that's kind of dangerous. So you want this MIPS system that can allow your head to slide and twist when you're in an impact that's not, you know, exactly head on. And I know Virginia Tech actually does like helmet ratings for stars. I think they go up to 5 stars, and 5 stars is, I won't say the best, but it's like of the helmets, it's the best you can get at that time is a 5-star helmet. And Virginia Tech themselves does recommend, if you're looking to buy a helmet, only buy something that they themselves have rated 4 or 5 stars, but they're not, I don't think, associated with any specific helmet. It's just, we rated, you know, these 30, picking a random number. It's like, of these 30, these 8 are 4 or 5 stars. Pick one of these 8 helmets to buy, and preferably one with MIPS, because that would be helpful. Because government data does show that more than half of the people who die in bike collisions with motor vehicles weren't wearing helmets. And it's like, I feel like the helmet law here has just sort of become, eh, whatever. You will see it. The people I see wearing helmets most, I did actually see a good number in San Francisco when I was there, but that's, again, because they all, you know, a lot of people bike regularly there. But outside of San Francisco, I haven't seen people actually wearing helmets too much, except for like families. So I'll see, you know, parents out with young kids, and everyone's got a helmet on, because thank you, mom or dad, for setting a good example. But once, you know, kids get to a certain age and they can do it by themselves, I'll often, you know, not see any helmet. And it's not even like they have a helmet and just won't put it on. It's like, you don't even seem to have a helmet with you. Do you even own a helmet? Is there a helmet anywhere, like, at your house? I'm not sure. I cannot tell. It doesn't seem to be that way. And I totally did that in middle school, because, you know, wearing a helmet was, like, dorky. But it was just like, yeah, no, after that incident with my sister, I'm like, I like my helmet. I'm good. I'm thankful for this helmet. Thank you very much. But Virginia Tech does other helmet ratings outside of bike helmets, which I get. It's amazing. I didn't know there were certain things like helmets like this. I got, you know, bike helmets, sure. Football helmets, absolutely. hockey helmets. Oh, yeah, that's right. They also do ratings for soccer. And soccer, there are a couple that are helmets, but a lot of them are like cushioned headbands. I don't quite know. Really thick headbands to protect your head in case of you getting a really fast ball kick to the head. I'm not sure. I played soccer for a while and I did actually get like a ball kick to the face once or twice, but not to the point, it hurt and it stung, but it, not to the point where it was like, I need a, you know, helmet-like device on my head to protect it. But I guess as you get further and further up with people who can definitely kick the ball harder than like my teammates could, that could probably be a major issue. So they do a lot of different helmet ratings. And they do look at helmets that best reduce concussion risk. So like, especially for, again, football. Football is the one I think we've been hearing the most about in the past few years regarding, you know, concussions and health and the long-term effects of that. And so on their site, helmets are evaluated using two concepts. Each test is weighted based on how frequently players experience them, you know, this sort of hit and whatever. And helmets that lower head acceleration reduce concussion risk. So that is also measured. It is, you know, necessary to kind of point out, no helmet is concussion proof. I'm not sure even if technology improved significantly that we could do that, just because partly I don't know you could ever rate something that way because people are different and a helmet that works for one person might not work for another. But also B, I'm just not sure technology would get that way because it's hard to predict for every type of hit. Like again, the standards for bike helmets were only looking at direct hits, even though that's not how a lot of bike accidents happened. They did that, I think, for a while with football helmets as well, where they just sort of test on, you know, a direct hit, but a lot of football hits can sort of cause the head to slide or to turn, and that's a whole nother thing to consider. So research has shown that, and shown like as we go on, we get this more and more research. It's like, oh no, yes, this especially, repeated concussions and impacts can come with serious risks. The brains of many former football players have shown signs of neurodegenerative disease, and this can include symptoms like memory loss, erratic behavior, impaired judgment, and depression. And I get that. I mean, I definitely get that. Again, through football, I think that's the one we've heard the most about. And you've heard, you know, certain stories of people who played football pretty much all their lives, played football professionally. And then I think it's what, like the rate of, I don't want to say domestic abuse, don't quote me on that, but the rate of something where people don't normally do it is higher in football players, and they attribute that to the head injuries that come from, if not concussions, hitting your head a lot and the changes that can make in your brain. But football helmets also face another problem that bike helmets don't exactly. Because football helmets usually fit quite snugly on the head, which, you know, it's kind of what you want because you're about to run and or tackle and or whatever, you need your helmet to move with you. You don't want this big sort of thing that just flops around. But because they fit so snugly, this can be dangerous when you have hits to the side of the helmet or rotational hits, because these can twist the wearer's head along with the helmet. There's not any space for like the helmet to turn, but the head not to. They're so snug that it's like, if I'm hitting you in an angle where your helmet's turning, your head's turning with it, and that can be very dangerous. And I had mentioned earlier that research has shown that when people riding bikes wear helmets, both they and like people in cars view them as less vulnerable. So bicyclists will, you know, perhaps behave in a less safe manner. People in cars will drive faster when passing people on bikes. They'll drive a little closer. I know in California in the past few years, we had that law about, I think it's 3 feet or whatever. You have to give a bicyclist 3 feet from the bike lane of space to make sure you're not going to hit them, even if they happen to like move over a little to the side. But it's very interesting. There was a researcher who did like multiple tests, and he had some instrument that measured how much space people gave him and did find this, this decrease when he wore a helmet than when he didn't. But he also found that if he rode a bike, while wearing a long wig to kind of make him seem like a female from the back, that drivers were then more careful and gave him a bit more room because women are more fragile or something. So it is very interesting that, like, even if you, especially because this is not really conscious, the changes that can happen in people's behavior, but this also exists in football. Research suggests that when participants wear helmets, both they and those around them view the wearers as less vulnerable and they act accordingly. So in football, this means they might, a person wearing a helmet, because they're like, oh, I've got a helmet, I'm good, I'm secure, I'm protected, they might be more willing to smash their head against an opponent or to take a hard hit than obviously they would be if they weren't wearing one. They feel, you know, more invulnerable. And that's not necessarily the case because those helmets aren't like, I can stop anything and you're never going to get hurt. So please, I know it's very hard because, again, this is subconscious, but if you do wear a helmet, almost still act like you're not wearing one to the best of your abilities, just to avoid any, you know, possible injuries. So we're going to take a short break. Then when we come back, we'll be talking about some other safety gear that are not helmets. So stay tuned.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Health and Wellness Podcast. I know we do typically think of helmets when we think of like sports safety gear, especially for football. That's just somehow the major thing we think of. But there are other gear. And if you are playing a sport or doing something physically active, even if it's not something you immediately think of, you may want to consider it just, of course, you know, for best health results possible. So these include things like protective eyewear. And according to the American Academy of Ophthalmology, more than 90% of all sports-related eye injuries could be prevented with the use of appropriate protective eyewear. So I know you do definitely see this with some athletes in sports that don't normally think of like, oh, I need protective eyewear. And it's definitely, I think, for some people, a matter of putting, you know, your health above like your pride, because especially several years ago, it was just like, man, you look like a dork. But designs have definitely improved in recent years. You can definitely find some cool, sleek ones. It just depends on what you're doing and how strong of a, you know, eye goggle or whatever that you need, of whether or not you can find the sleekest one you want. But mostly if you're in anything where something could like come flying at your eye, that might be something to consider. So this is things like beyond, you know, I know hockey has the eye shields or whatever, because, yeah, those are fast-flying pucks. But then I've seen basketball players wear these also, and it's like, okay, but a basketball is not really going to, I mean, it's going to hurt your face maybe, but injure your eye. But, you know, people throw elbows at times in these games. And so it often can come in ways you don't necessarily immediately think of, but it's definitely something to consider. Also, mouth guards, which was somewhat recommended, I know, when I played soccer, but it was just like, this is not comfortable and it's hard to talk in. And no, it wasn't required. So it was just like, I tried it and I made one and I did the whole, you know, drop it in boiling water and then bite into it. And why is there not a better way to do that? And it was just like, yeah, I don't like this. And I haven't been hit in the jaw that much. So pass. And then I stopped playing soccer shortly after that. So I was okay, but, you know, I didn't play long enough to actually see the chances of me getting hurt with that. But mouth guards not only help protect your teeth, they also help protect tongue and lip injuries. and help reduce the risk of suffering a concussion or fractured jaw. Because again, so many of these injuries can be things you don't immediately expect. Because again, like in hockey, okay, fine. Or football, they've got a mouth guard. That I get, because you're slamming into people and all sorts of other things. I could get why you'd want to protect your jaw. But then like with other sports, it's just like, wait, really? Oh, okay. I mean, definitely I want to protect my jaw. I want to have like all my own teeth when I'm however old I'm going to get. But it's just not something you necessarily think of. And even if it's like, oh, this is uncomfortable and or dorky, just think of how glad you'll be later when you still do have all your teeth and you've never had any major jaw problems, and how much that's worth a little bit of dorkiness we'll go with. Also, safety pads and guards. This I know comes up again, especially with hockey and football. It feels like so much of this is about hockey and football. And yeah, fine, those are two, you know, sort of quote unquote bruiser sports where people are purposefully slamming into other people regularly. So yeah, obviously. But safety pads and guards may be required in many contact sports beyond football and hockey, things like lacrosse, but they should be worn, they recommend, for any contact sport whatsoever. So these are beyond just, you know, like the shoulder, chest pads, whatever, that make hockey and football players look, you know, wow, you've put on just a whole bunch of mass there. These include things shin, knee, elbow, wrist, chest, neck, shoulder, hip, and thigh pads and guards. I'd heard of most of those. Shin guards, obviously, from soccer. Knee, elbow, wrist, I've seen on, like, you know, inline skaters. Got it. Chest, neck, shoulder, sure. Hockey, football, okay. Hip, I hadn't really thought of. I was just like, a hip guard or pad, huh? Thigh pads I had heard of, fine. But a hip one, I'm like, I mean, yes, absolutely, certainly protect your hip, but also wasn't something I really thought of as possibly getting injured too regularly. So shows what I know. They also recommend, obviously, wearing the proper footwear and athletic shoes. It's amazing to me to consider, like, decades ago, when, you know, they didn't have the proper running or tennis or athletic shoes, or was like, what did you do? What did you play in? Because now we hear, you know, how terrible it is not to have them. It's like, but you didn't have them and you played sports just fine. How exactly? But then there are also other things that they didn't mention, but I think are pretty important, are sort of the gender specific things. So this came up, I know I saw on a couple of things where they're talking about like safety equipment. One of the things they mentioned was like a cup, which is something guys know about and I don't really know too much about. I've never had to wear a cup, so I've only got like basic imagining understanding of how that exactly functions. Likewise with like a dance belt for dancers, I'm like, I've got a kind of but not really a, like, full understanding of how that works exactly. But for ladies, things like sports bra and having a proper sports bra for the sport you're playing, because a sports bra for like yoga is different from the sports bra you would want for like tennis. Depending on how active you're going to be, you definitely want a sports bra that's made to fit according to your activity. And beyond discomfort, like just not fun, can actually, I won't say damage you health-wise, but, you know, there has been research about like torn ligaments or whatever from excessive movement without a sports bra. So definitely. And again, this is one of those things where you kind of wonder, how did you do without it? Because I believe the modern sports bra came about in the like 60s or 70s or something, where a woman sewed, was essentially like two jock straps together and put them upside down over her chest. And I'm like, A, brilliant, way to MacGyver that. But also B, again, what did you do before? Did women not ever have to run? Like, I cannot imagine. I'm super thankful amongst anything else in my few times whenever I like actually try and get into a serious exercise regimen or go to the gym. It's like, sports bras, thank you. And all the wonderful plethora of choices and how pretty and cute they are. And I apologize, guys. I'm going off into a whole nother realm where you're just like, what? So I'm going to end for today. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Health and Wellness Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Health and Wellness Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.